with Dr. Arthur Upton, formerly Dean of Basic Health Sciences at the State University at Stony Brook. At Stony Brook, on August 3rd, 1989, in his office at the New York University Medical Center. All right?
Right.
All right, we'll start. We'll start with a few very simple questions at the beginning. Number one, name, department, rank, or position at Stony Brook.
I went to Stony Brook initially as the chairman of the Department of Pathology.
I see.
And when I arrived there, the dean of the School of Basic Health Sciences was Alfred Knudsen. Alfred announced his intention to leave just a short time after I arrived on the scene.
Do you know the date?
I arrived at Stony Brook, I believe, on July 1, 1969, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Summer of 69, as I recall.
How old were you?
Well, I was 46.
46, okay.
And Knudsen left that fall, so that we overlapped only a few months. With his departure, a search committee was formed to help identify candidates and to recruit a new dean of basic health sciences. I was asked to chair the search committee, and as we got into the consideration of the nature of the position, qualifications the candidates should have, and so on, it was suggested that I ought to put my hat in the ring as a potential candidate. I demurred initially, but as we thought about it further, I decided to do this. I don't recall now who was on the committee or how that suggestion evolved, but it seemed to me that that would be a way in which I could be most helpful. I was the first department chairman in the health sciences. Actually, Mel Simpson chaired the Department of Biochemistry, and that was a department that had been created in the Division of Biological Sciences.
In the university.
In the university.
Yes.
But with the expectation that Mel would wear essentially two hats, that he would eventually have dual membership in the School of Basic Health Sciences as well as in the Division of Biological Sciences. And there were no other faculty members in Basic Health Sciences at the time.
In the Health Science Center.
In the Health Science Center.
Right.
So I recognized that the deanship was a very important responsibility. There was a need to get about the business of building a faculty. And so I decided that I would be of more help in that role and get some fun out of it. So I recruited Myron Kushner to be chairman of pathology.
I see.
I relinquished my position to him. I became the dean of the School of Basic Health Sciences.
From what institution and position did you come? Where were you?
I was at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Oak Ridge. I see.
I was responsible there for the section of pathology and physiology in the biology division. I'd had that job for some 15 years.
I see.
I'd always assumed I would go back to a teaching institution. I'd always aspired to be a professor somewhere. And over the years, opportunities had come, but I was having so much fun doing research at Oak Ridge that I kept putting it off, putting off a departure from there. And when the opportunity came to join the staff at Stony Brook, it seemed to me I shouldn't defer any longer. I should take it.
Right. Who was primarily responsible for your coming?
Ed Pellegrino.
Ed Pellegrino.
That's right.
Where did you know him?
Well, I had never really gotten to know him well. He reminded me that he had tried to recruit me to Kentucky when he had been at Kentucky before going to Stony Brook. And I'd forgotten that. But he apparently watched me and had become interested in me. And it was his effort that interested me in Stony Brook. Actually, there were other factors. My research had been done with radiation.
Yes.
And the colleagues at Brookhaven were close by. The opportunity to continue to be active in the field of radiation research through associations at Brookhaven, through resources that existed there, was a factor. I'd also come to be interested in the role of viruses in radiation carcinogenesis. And once again, the strength in molecular biology at Cold Spring Harbor was another drawing card. So I think the rather exciting, ambitious, challenging prospects that Pellegrino sketched out in his plans for the Health Sciences Center, along with the proximity of colleagues at Brookhaven and Cold Spring Harbor, were the drawing cards.
I see. Well, that's six.
That's six, right.
Five and six.
Right.
Seven. What was your understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook? What picture did you have?
Well, I think that all of us in the 60s were highly impressed with the blueprint that was projected at the time. I think that Stony Brook was envisaged to become the Berkeley of the East, so to speak. And this colored my own expectations. I foresaw the likelihood that one would have the opportunity at Stony Brook to help in the creation of an academic institution that had the mandate to be a center of excellence. A university in the fullest sense, with all of the disciplines represented, an institution in which there would be encouragement for interdisciplinary communication and collaboration. So that was really the drawing card, a chance to do something new, create something new, create something very good.
Yes, right. All right. Well, that's
And the next part of the question is, was the vision being translated into transformed into reality? Well, it seemed to be when I arrived on the scene. The people who were there were very good. There was an atmosphere of hope, activity, confidence, so that there was no reason, as I arrived, to think that the dream was going to be somehow nothing more than a dream.
Eight.
When I first came, as I say, the place was a bustle. Pellegrino himself was a man of enormous energy, an unusual person, an idealist, great visions, amazing facility with language, with ideas, a Renaissance man in every sense. And
practical?
Well, in a way, yes. He, I thought, was amazingly successful in engaging the interest and the support of people in the community, people on the campus, people in Albany whose support was crucial. So that I thought he was not only a dreamer, an architect, but a builder, someone who had the capacity to be sufficiently realistic to translate dreams into realities. It was a very exciting time.
How do you rate him against other people in the medical profession at that time?
Ed, to me, is a very special person, almost without comparison. Ed was not a brilliant clinician, a hands-on physician. He wanted to be, he wanted to remain strongly identified with the practice of medicine, maintained ties and communication with medicine. Ed also wanted to be a scientist, wanted to be a scholar, wanted to contribute to the growth of medical knowledge, and actually maintained a laboratory. At the same time, Ed was a product of the Jesuit tradition, a devout Catholic, raised in the Catholic faith, strongly concerned about ethics, the moral imperatives, the ethical imperatives of
the profession,
of a human being in the 20th century. So all of these facets were somehow integrated into one personality, and
that's rare.
It's an extremely rare situation. I don't know anyone else who embodies these characteristics to the degree that Ed does. Now, it's true that as one saw the problems that had to be surmounted, in the early 70s, the state found itself in a fiscal predicament, and for a time, the dream of a health sciences center became highly questionable. I can remember one staff meeting when Ed came in and said that the plan to construct a new building or buildings to house the faculty and the hospital was in serious danger of being scrapped, and that we might all wind up in the Veterans Hospital at Northport. That might be a fallback position, a compromise that would have to house the hospital and the medical operation at least during the foreseeable future. Well, all of us, of course, gasped, worried about how it would turn out. Somehow Ed and others prevailed over the legislature, and the monies did come and the buildings did go up.
Ed addressed the legislature himself.
Well, I can recall that he went to Albany to do this. I didn't accompany him, so I don't know what he said.
Yeah.
But he was a very charismatic and engaging person.
Right.
Other events that stand out in my mind, Knudsen, who was the associate dean, the dean for basic sciences. I think when I first arrived, he was an associate dean for basic sciences, and then the decision was taken to create a school with a separate dean. But Al was an amazing guy, very thoughtful, intelligent, highly motivated person, trained in medicine, but with a PhD degree in molecular genetics, as I recall, a consummate scientist. He had a strong impact on me. The other members of the faculty at the time, Helen Fahey had been recruited as the dean of nursing, Howard Oakes as the dean of dentistry, Ed McTernan as the dean of allied health professions, and Sandy Kravitz, the dean of the School of Social Welfare. They were all impressive people, leaders in their own professions. It was an exciting time and an exciting company in which to be involved.
When did you have a hand in the construction planning, the planning of the buildings, or the planning of the curriculum?
There was a chap on the staff working with Ed Pellegrino, a fellow named Jim Shaw, who played the major role in the facilities, planning, design, construction, and so on. That was his task, to be responsible for facilities. I think he had some training in architecture. We were consulted, those of us who were part of that early group, the deans, were consulted by Ed about the physical plant. And I'll never forget one meeting in which Bertrand Goldberg, who was the chief architect for the Health Sciences Center, was...
That for the clinical tower?
The hospital building, the mega structure, as it was called,
yeah.
It would connect the basic science tower, the tower for the medical faculty, and the tower for the hospital. Goldberg was a colorful, flamboyant sort of person, and came with a retinue of associates. Large architectural drawings rolled up under his arm. And he gave a slide talk to explain his design and his plan for the physical layout. It was a labyrinthine structure that he tried to describe to us. And I'll never forget, at one point he got lost in the drawings as they were projected onto the screen. And lost his patience and said, "I wish someone would tell me what it is I'm trying to point out to you." But I personally thought that the plan, as Goldberg had envisaged it, might turn out to be highly efficient in that it would enable interaction among the components of the Health Science Center, the different schools, the different departments. But obviously, in my view, when that structure finally took shape on the landscape, I was aghast. It seems to me totally out of keeping with the pastoral landscape of Long Island. It might fit in a metropolis, downtown New York or downtown Chicago, but it offends my aesthetic senses in its present setting there.
I think that's unavoidable in a sense.
It may be progress.
To put all of that footage spread out, you'd have to do a lot of walking around.
Yes, that's true. I've seen the building. There are buildings like that, though. I was at the Bureau of Standards, which is now the National Institute of Standards and Technology at Gaithersburg, Maryland. I was there on Monday. And they do have a series of wings connected by corridors that spread out a great distance over the landscape. It's true, one needs to do a good bit of walking, but it doesn't offend the eyes. And that structure that houses the Health Sciences Center at Stony Brook, to me, is an affront to my aesthetic senses whenever I see it.
I think you're not the only one.
It may be, as I say, it may be efficient, but it certainly isn't beautiful in my view.
Right.
And you asked about the curriculum. Yes, I did have, as Dean of the School of Basic Health Sciences, a major responsibility for bringing together the faculty members, and there were only a few in those early days, the biochemists, the microbiologists, the pharmacologists, the pathologists, and so on, in a discussion of the curriculum, trying to put the plans together and actually translate the plans into a teaching program. It was very exciting.
Just tick off the basic health sciences.
Well, let's see now. The notion was that the non-clinical sciences would be taught by a faculty who would minister to all of the health professions, so that the same faculty in biochemistry and microbiology and pathology and pharmacology and anatomy, those were the key departments, would teach medical students, dental students, nursing students, students in allied health, students in social welfare, so that each of the professional schools would not have its own department of anatomy, its own department of biochemistry. One wouldn't duplicate those departments. It was recognized that departments would have to be a little larger if they were going to teach that many more students. But there would be advantages in having one department on the campus that had responsibility for a given discipline, and having a strong department, large enough, strong enough, to provide instruction to students in different programs.
To your knowledge, has that been carried out?
To my knowledge, that has been carried out. About the time I left Stony Brook, and I left in 77, in the summer of 77, I left to go to the National Cancer Institute. And about that time, the issue as to whether the basic science departments ought to be incorporated into the medical school so that the School of Basic Health Sciences would cease to exist as an independent entity, or whether they should remain independent, the issue was being debated. And there were strong feelings on both sides. The separation of the basic sciences from the School of Medicine is an unusual arrangement. In most other medical schools, the basic science faculty are part of the medical faculty. And I think it was a source of some tension, some unease, some anxiety at Stony Brook that the basic science faculty should be independent from the medical faculty. So I think the primary interest in the amalgamation, if you will, came from medicine. Perhaps some of the basic science faculty also wanted to join the medical school. They may have seen this as having advantages to them. But I can only imagine that the people in the other schools, dentistry, nursing, allied health, and so on, viewed such a merger of basic science and medicine with some misgivings.
You know what happened, actually?
I'm not dead sure. It's my impression that the basic sciences did join medicine.
I see.
So that the Department of Pathology now, the Department of Microbiology, are part of the medical school. I couldn't swear to this, but I think that's what happened.
Right.
Or at least to a degree that happened. biochemistry may have stayed independent. It may have remained in the biological sciences, and microbiology may have remained there. Pathology, pharmacology, physiology might have gone into medicine. I've neglected to mention physiology before, but that was one of the disciplines in the basic sciences, separate department. Van der Ploeg was the chairman of that department.
Van der Ploeg. Can you tick off the chairman of the other departments?
Well, I helped to recruit him, so I ought to be able to remember him. Let's see if I can. As I mentioned, Mel Simpson was already there.
Yes.
And was the chairman of biochemistry. Van der Ploeg was recruited as the chairman of physiology and biophysics. Maynard Dewey was recruited as the chairman of anatomy. Marvin Kushner was recruited as the chairman of pathology. And Arthur Grohlman was recruited as the chairman of pharmacology. Joe Cates was recruited as the chairman of microbiology.
Good.
So those were the key chairmen, the initial chairman of those departments.
I wonder how many of them are still there.
Well, Kushner, of course, is there.
Yes.
He became dean of the School of Medicine after Ed Pellegrino left. Ed wore the two hats initially as vice president for the health sciences and dean, or at least acting dean, of the School of Medicine. Mel Simpson is still on the campus, I'm told. He's no longer chairman of biochemistry.
Yes, I've interviewed him.
Bill Van der Ploeg, I think, is still chairman of physiology. I'm not certain of that. Maynard Dewey is still there, and I don't know whether he's still chairman of anatomy. Joe Cates is no longer at Stony Brook. He went to Scripps on the West Coast.
Oh, really? His department again?
Microbiology. Arthur Grohlman is still on the campus, and I think he's still chairman of pharmacology. Well, what was my understanding of my own place? Well,
yes.
I was recruited, I think, to help develop the Department of Pathology. And as I explained, I got involved in trying to help recruit a new associate dean of basic sciences. I think I was appointed because Ed Pellegrino and others, and on the search committee, Victor Bond from Brookhaven was one of the members, saw me as someone who had established himself in science. I was recognized as a strong scientist in my field, someone who had demonstrated leadership capabilities. And they saw me as a reasonably good candidate to help build a department of pathology. And I had other offers to go elsewhere to chair pathology. So this wasn't the first time someone had seen me as having the qualifications to chair a department of pathology. As I mentioned earlier, I thought this was going to be a good place. And the prospect of being able to build a department of pathology that could draw on the strengths at Brookhaven and the strengths at Cold Spring Harbor, not to mention the strengths on the Stony Brook campus, was a very exciting and attractive prospect. How have these expectations worked out? Well, I was very happy at Stony Brook. I had the good fortune to help in recruiting good people, planning curricula for several schools, medicine, dentistry, nursing, allied health, and so on, helping to put up buildings and open schools, grant degrees. So it was very creative, very exciting. I discovered that as I worked at the dean's office, and actually as the faculty came into being, and the institutions began to operate, that I was not so happy just administering a school. The fun for me was in helping it develop. But once it came into being, I hankered to go back into science.
Well, that sounds like Ed Pellegrino, too.
Yeah, that's true. He was more of an architect than an administrator.
Yes.
And I, too, got more pleasure out of creating, building.
Putting the pieces into place.
Right, than in overseeing the day-to-day operation. So I recognized after I'd been in the dean's office for about 5 years that if I didn't go back to research very soon, the field would move away from me and I would never catch up to it again. So I resigned the deanship and went back into the Department of Pathology as a teacher and investigator.
You did that while you were still at Stony Brook.
I did that when I was still there, and it was a very happy experience for me. I don't have any regrets at all going to Stony Brook or actually taking on the tasks that I did. I don't think that I failed in my efforts. The school today, I think, is an excellent medical school, still a young one, but it has done very well, and so I think my efforts worked out well for me, and as far as I know, worked out well for the institution.
Yeah. When you speak of the institution, you're talking about the entire health science center?
Talking about the whole campus, actually. If I want to say that, maybe the whole state university. As I mentioned earlier, those of us who were involved with the Health Sciences Center in its infancy, envisaged that Stony Brook itself would be one of the great universities of this country, that it would not somehow be aborted, that it would ultimately grow and develop into a strong university, and that the Health Sciences Center would be a preeminently strong academic health sciences center. It would ultimately rank with the best in the country. It would not just turn out country doctors, as it were, but it would have established a scholarly tradition.
You sound a little bit like those people who wrote the Heald Report.
Well, I've seen references to that report, and I've looked at some pages of it now and again, but I don't recall now the details. So did I?
Well,
I couldn't agree or disagree with that comment.
At the time, Heald was president of the Ford Foundation.
Ah.
And there's a phrase in it that Stony Brook should stand with the finest in the country.
Yes. Well, we wanted it to. We hoped that it would, and that was we set out to try to make that happen. And I think that it will happen. I think that it is happening. Stony Brook is still new, still fairly small. I don't think if one polled people in academic medicine across the country, Stony Brook would be named in the top 10. But it's certainly in the top 20 or 30 schools, I would say, which is very good.
Yeah. All right. Were your activities confined to the Stony Brook campus?
Yes, yes. I may have gone to Albany once or twice with Ed Pellegrino on various official missions because I did serve as the dean of the School of Basic Health Sciences, and there were budgets that had to be presented in Albany. But I don't think I ever went there alone, and I never cultivated a close acquaintanceship with colleagues in the central office of the university.
Was Norman Hurd the director of the budget then under Rockefeller?
That name is familiar to me, but I'm not sure that he was the budget officer during the time I was there.
I see. Did Rockefeller die while you were there?
I believe he did. I believe that, I can't recall the chronology now.
And was Governor Kerry? Did he come in while you were there?
I don't remember. I do recall that during the time I've been at NYU since 1980, Kerry was the governor. Mm-hmm. And he appointed me to a panel that I served on after I came to NYU. So my guess is that he was not in office when I was at Stony Brook.
Yes. All right. Well, then you went from Stony Brook to the National Institutes?
Yes, I was asked to allow myself to be considered as a candidate for the directorship of the National Cancer Institute. And thought a lot about this because, as I mentioned to you, I wanted to get back into teaching and research. But my career had taken me to the Cancer Institute many times as an advisor. I served on one of the study sections. Much of my research had concerned cancer, carcinogenesis. And the prospect of serving as the director of the Institute, helping to advance the program, was so challenging, so fascinating, that I agreed to do it. And after being there for only about a year, it was clear to me that there was much too much politics, much too much administration, and much too little science to make Art Upton happy.
I see.
So I realized that was not a good place for me to spend the rest of my life. And I decided to come back to an academic setting and had the chance to come back to NYU and did so. I say back to NYU, had the chance to come to NYU.
Were you a native of New York?
No, I grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Oh, really?
And spent the first part of my academic career at Michigan, went to Oak Ridge, supposedly for just a couple of years to do some full-time research and then come back to a medical school somewhere.
When did you go to Oak Ridge?
Went there in 51.
51, uh-huh.
That was, again, so engaging, so fascinating, got involved with so many interesting things that almost two decades go by.
Yeah. Did you know Pollard down at Oak Ridge?
I knew Pollard, yes. We were not close personal friends, but I knew him, admired him very much.
There are two Pollards. Ernie Pollard was biophysics.
Ernie Pollard was at Yale, that's right. I knew both of them.
The first name of the other Pollard escapes me.
Yes, I must say, I'm blocking on it at the moment, too. It'll come to me, but it doesn't come right now.
Perfect.
When I try to force those things, it often works in reverse.
Right. I visited Oak Ridge once. I left Brookhaven in 52.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
I was in the director's office.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Well, 14. You want to summarize that? What do you feel that you yourself had accomplished?
Well, let's just take a shot at that.
All right.
I went there in 69 as chairman of pathology. Knudsen left. I joined the search committee. I think I was appointed dean of the School of Basic Sciences in 1970. And I think shortly thereafter, or about simultaneously, I recruited Marvin Kushner, or helped to recruit Kushner, as chairman of pathology.
From where?
From NYU.
From NYU.
And he brought along some very good people, Aaron Janoff and Fred Miller and Mildred Phillips. all came to Stony Brook from NYU largely through the efforts of Marvin Kushner. Phil Kane also. So I think...
Kane,
K-A-N-E, I believe.
K-A-N-E.
I believe so. And Bernie Lane. So there were... The nucleus of the Department of Pathology that it had been my responsibility to create did come into being pretty much by the end of 1971.
When did Lauren Ackerman come, do you know?
Lauren, I believe, was later. I couldn't pinpoint the year. Marvin deserves the credit. It was really Marvin who brought these pathologists to Stony Brook. But I brought Marvin.
Yeah.
So you ask, what did I accomplish by 1971? I think we laid the foundation, at least, for the Department of Pathology, which is a good department, brought some excellent people. I can't, as I emphasize, claim the entire credit because it's really Marvin's work, but I brought Marvin. Now also, by the end of 71, we had probably recruited, and I can't pinpoint the dates, but I would think that Van der Kloot, who was chairman of physiology, Dewey, who was chairman of anatomy.
Dewey, D-E-W?
D-E-W-E-Y, right. Maynard Dewey.
Mm-hmm.
Those appointments had been made, so that by the end of 71, we had the makings of the basic science faculty. It took longer to get the Department of Pharmacology. Grohlman came later. Cates came later, as I recall, in microbiology. So we hadn't really put the school together, but we'd gotten a very good start by that time.
I remember seeing an entire shelf, really about two or three shelves, of red-backed volumes.
Yes.
Representing the plans for the university.
Right.
For the Health Science Center.
Yes.
Who developed those?
Well, I would suppose those were Ed Pellegrino's
and
plans, primarily. He and Knudsen, yeah.
Knudsen. Mm-hmm.
Howard Oakes was recruited fairly early, and I think had a large contribution to the development of the plans. My own contribution is minimal. They were pretty well in existence by the time I got there.
I see. Okay. I remember interviewing Ed Pellegrino at the time that he was being considered. And at the time, I was interested in individual differences and the physical basis of intellectual characteristics.
Mm, yes.
And I had talked with the head of the mental hospital in Danville, Pennsylvania. This was when I was at Bucknell as dean. And also, since we were in Lewisburg, I talked with the warden.
Yes.
Of the penitentiary.
Yes.
And they both expressed keen interest and desire to get at the physical basis of the characteristics with which their institutions were dealing.
Right.
Criminal intent.
Right.
And mental balance.
Right.
The warden said he'd give his eye teeth if he could find some basis, physical basis, for determining more accurately whether to parole or not.
Right. Well, I think we all want very much to understand how the mind works. And neuroscience today, neurobiology, is a very exciting field because we are beginning to sort out the chemical reactions that are responsible for cognition, memory, emotion. We're still a long way, I'm afraid, long way away, I'm afraid, from an adequate understanding. And the age-old question of the relative importance of nature as opposed to nurture,
yes,
hasn't been answered.
Right.
But increasingly, we are learning the chemical basis for,
right,
for neurological and emotional and mental activities.
Well, Ed and I got together on that, and then Johnny asked me what I thought of him, and I said I thought he would make a first-rate leader.
I think he was an extraordinarily good choice. Question 15 asks about other individuals.
Yes, right.
I do recall John Toll as an immensely dedicated and forceful person. Alec Pond, I remember. Bentley Glass, I admired enormously. In my view, almost the archetype professor of biology. So I think that that group of people who helped to shape the future of that campus